And these are things we made up on our own, not just sort of out of the blue, but by observing wildlife, by understanding them, how they move through an environment and their needs, so that we could then set up our own needs in a way that wasn't going to create conflict.
Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First. Hey, everybody, it's Aiden.
Hi, everyone. Sarah here. We are with Julie Stonefelt from Wild Homestead Living.
And John here, just really reminiscing about all the years I've known Julie since 1996, when John Gallagher was still living in a teepee. Speaking of Wild Homestead Living, but it's really nice to see you, Julie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's so good to be here with you.
So nice to be reconnected with you. The first thing, you know, and just kind of buzzing over the Wild Homestead Living website, I went right to your frequently asked questions, right? And I thought, interesting. But I want to ask a question that isn't here that I've seen yet, which is, how did you even get into this? Like, what led you here to this path with your husband?
That is a great question. And I would say there was several major pivots in my life, turning points that sort of led to what Wild Homestead Living is and to me being here in this moment. And truly one of the first and most profound ones was meeting you. You know, I was a teenager. I was 16 years old when I met you. I'm now 46. So that gives you a sense of how long that time span is. But I had a loving family, but there was a lot of personal problems and health issues, and it led to me taking on a lot more responsibility than most teenagers have. And I never really fit into the suburbs where I grew up. So those pressures were leading me down a really dark path. And, you know, getting into drugs and alcohol and ways of just coping in the modern world and with those things. And then I had the opportunity to meet you through a neighbor of mine. And it really helped me to shift to the things that I learned in childhood, playing on the beach, stealing vegetables from the community garden at the park next door, and finding my way back to myself. Learning how to connect in a good way with others and the more than human world. And so after meeting you and getting myself back on this path and going to college and graduating, I then have been in careers that are related to the environment. I worked in wildlife rehabilitation for many years, and I am now a full-time park ranger. And even though my full-time job was always working with nature and helping people connect with nature, my personal life had gotten very urban and almost claustrophobic and really caught up in sort of the convenience of modern society. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time. And I thought going through treatment, I would be able to then go back to my life as it was before diagnosis. And by the time I got there, I wasn't the same person anymore. And I sort of started to experience a little bit of that sort of crisis that I had as a teenager. And I realized that through the ashes of my old life falling away, I had the opportunity to create something new. And what I wanted to create was going back to that life that I'd always had before, working with you, working with nature, spending a lot of my time outside, really slowing down. And so my husband and I, after a little bit of my own personal crisis of just being like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, we decided to buy land, move to the country. And that's what we did. That's where I am now. And funnily enough, I live very close to the last place that I lived when I was working at with Wilderness Awareness School and was roommates with Aiden all those years ago. And I realized that this idea of homesteading was sort of appealing. It was more than just survival in the wilderness. It was survival on a daily basis of connecting with nature. And I didn't think I could do it in an urban place. Once we arrived on our own land, I realized all the things I'd learned, all the things I was doing really weren't so much place-based as mindset and perspective-based. And I felt a very strong desire to help people connect with nature wherever they were, beyond my day job as a park ranger, beyond me just living in a cool place. And so we decided to form Wild Homestead Living to help people realize that they could connect with nature and have this sort of simple seasonal life wherever they were. So that's a very sort of long yet short condensed version of how I got to this moment.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. And have you seen that you're able to help people? Like, you're doing most of your stuff online with regards to Wild Homestead Living?
Yes, we are doing it mostly online. And I think that the moment I realized how profound an impact we were having is when my breast cancer came back in 2023. I found another lump and my breast cancer had returned, and I needed to tell the world that it happened and then I might need to take a step back and a pause. And so I created a video, because a lot of what we were doing at that time was short YouTube videos. And I received a profound response from people all over the world, letting me know the impact that I had had and that we were having and helping them feel connected. We had people in Scotland and Sweden and Norway and Australia and Germany, all over the US and Canada, reach out to me. And then I just created an online virtual community that we're calling the Wild Homestead Living Neighborhood, Four Seasons of Simple Living. And so I'm connecting with people in a smaller, more sustained way, in a more of a mentorship type of relationship. We've got people in there from Canada, Australia, and then multiple states in the US, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, Oregon. So in those ways, those are a few of the ways that I've been able to see the impact that we're having so far. Of course, I have big dreams and ways that I would like to see it grow, but that's what I'm seeing right now.
Mm. It's so parallel to what Sarah, Aiden, and I are doing with Living Connection First Village, right? Like, it's amazing. I think one of the gifts of working online with people is that they get to do whatever it is that you're doing in their own backyard, right? Whereas I kind of grew up around the tracker school where people fly in from all over the world. They do all this cool stuff, then they go home and it doesn't quite bridge for them, you know? And then Tom started in 2012 to run online classes. And when he did, he said, wow, this is working better than I thought. And I think the reason it is because people are actually getting to do it right from the comfort of their own home, in their own yard, in their own neighborhood. And yeah, it is a real, I actually love what we do. And I'm sure you and Kevin love what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm so curious about the roots where you started talking about how your life changed in meeting John. What were some of the things that you learned from John, and I imagine directly from nature, learned or experienced? Like, what was it that really helped you make that transformation? I can really relate to that. As a young person, I grew up really close to nature. I had several years of disconnection, and then I found myself looking for the way back. The reason why I'm asking is I suspect that those gems that you gathered are ones that you're also passing on to other people.
That is such a beautiful question. Thank you for asking. It's true. I had very much an immersive nature connection experience as a child. I spent a lot of my life on Whidbey Island, where my family had property, and they didn't call it off-grid in the 70s and 80s, but that's what it was. And my dad had built this really cool trail where I could go play on the beach. I learned how to, you know, like eat vegetables, which frankly I stole from other people's community gardens, but you know, a pea here and there, I hope that they forgive me. And so I had that. And then I had that disconnection until I was a teenager. My parents divorced. My dad wasn't around a lot during that part of my life. And so there's so many ways that John and then the people who were drawn to him that I got to interact with really impacted my life. And I think in some ways I'm still figuring out what happened to me during that time period. I can tell you the way that I reconnected with y'all was I was writing a blog post for Wild Homestead Living, and I was doing research about how to find peace in nature. You know, we're recording this in the spring of 2025 in a very uncertain world, environmentally, politically, socially. And I thought this is something that I can help with. I can write something, even if it's just for the people who get our emails. And so I started Googling sit spot, and all of this information came up about, well, the preeminent, you know, authority on this and the person who's the most famous is this person named John Young. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, this is great. I know about this story, right? Like, this is my life. Like, one of the really key things for me in meeting John. And this was very early, right? Like, the idea of Eight Shields was still evolving. The Kamana program was not complete. And for those of you who know those programs, but the sit spot was something that I learned. And that was a really key tool for me, was to find a place close to where I lived in nature that I could sit alone on a regular basis. And I could go there, I could make observations, I could then have questions, because there's always curiosity that comes in observing nature. And I could research those, which, I mean, this was before the internet was really much of a thing. So, you know, I had books, or I could ask John, or I could ask other people. So developing a really close relationship, almost as if that sit spot was a human being. It was a beautiful cedar tree. And that was a really key part for me that I learned. And John also at that time was doing a high school program. And maybe John could speak to this more, but I was in this very mainstream high school that I did not love. And he did a high school program, and I got to both participate in that and help sort of be a high school mentor. So I got to have that connection. I also, my very first job was with John. So I got to be one of the first instructors at a summer camp. And my brother, instead of getting paid, I got to bring my brother to summer camp because my mom dealt with some chronic health issues. So I was sort of one of his primary caretakers. So he came, and I got to train my brother in those things. And having that opportunity to learn myself and then share right away was very grounding. And so those are just like a few highlights. And I'd love to delve into more about that. Oh, one more that I want to share that's been really crucial for me that is still right now very significant is there were many Indigenous educators who were drawn to John and Wilderness Awareness School at that time. And I had the opportunity to work with them. And some of the people who were most influential for me were Tony Tenfingers, Ralph Bennett, Jake Swamp, Ingwe, Grandma Chips. And so I didn't realize it at the time, but in a way I was getting a decolonized education before the world was talking about that. So, you know, now working as a full-time park ranger in environmental education, this is something that people are talking about, is how do we unlearn some of the ways that even when we're trying to help people connect with nature, sort of set up roadblocks. And I was fortunate to start from a place of learning how to connect with myself and with others and the natural world. And I honestly didn't even realize that sort of those three key levels I got from John and have been a through line in my career and personal work.
Yeah, that's a beautiful answer. You know, the last three things you mentioned, we often think of them as three legs of a stool, you know, and you want all three to be equal, otherwise the stool falls over, right? And it's a good simple way to think about it. And I was laughing, but of course I was muted because I didn't want to disturb what Julie was saying. The world's preeminent expert on the sit spot. Well, and of course that was passed on to me from Tom Brown, and you know, it just goes way back. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun that now I'm an expert on the sit spot. But you know what? It is kind of funny. I have been doing that practice since 1971. And here it is, you know, what is that, 54 years later, I'm still doing it, right? It's like the core of my day starts with that and ends with that, always, you know, always. Yeah, this is good. I'm glad to hear how these things go from, you know, elders who are now ancestors, because everyone you mentioned, plus Tom Brown, are now all, oh, no, that's not true, because Tony Tenfingers, I literally spoke to him last night. and Ralph Bennett, I texted with him 2 weeks ago. So those two guys are still around, thankfully. But a lot of the others you mentioned, including Tom, are now ancestors. And it is up to us. And I'm glad you embodied it to the point that you are now passing it forward in whatever way you are. The more, the merrier. And that's, of course, why we do Tracking Connection podcasts. We want to lift up the voices of people doing this in their way. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm so grateful for what I learned. I mean, really what I learned from you and what I was able to take from that into the rest of my life. I do feel like it saved my life. And it really is my origin story. It's a part of the story that I share in my day job when I get the opportunity to work with at-risk youth, of sort of how this helped me. It's not something I've had a chance to really share much with Wild Homestead Living audiences. So I think this is going to be a really fun introduction for them as well. But in addition to everything that you helped me learn and connect, I came away with a very strong sense of reciprocity, of passing on the gifts. I never felt there was a sense of like ownership or arrogance or ego or sort of control that I have felt in some other groups or people that I've met sort of, you know, in my now 30 years since I got into this work. And so I see that, and what you're doing with Tracking Connections too is really spreading it around, right? Like compost, like the more we can spread it, the better it's going to be for the growth of all of us.
Tracking Connections compost. What do you think of that, Aiden?
I love it. So the theme of ego and control, I appreciate you bringing those up, because one of the through lines that I'm hearing, you know, is kind of in that decolonizing mindset. I heard somebody say recently, if we look at sort of traditional farming, it's all about maximizing yields and stuff like that. And then we go into this organic farming or green, but we still maintain that mentality, right, of maximizing and controlling. And it's just very, very much about sort of humans over nature, right, or humans over the more than human world. And so I know that as we're talking about this idea of connection and reciprocity and all of that, I'm really curious about how you help people through Wild Homestead Living to learn that way of being in the world, because I think that's really a departure from sort of our typical modern mindset.
Yeah, thank you for that. It really is. And it gets back to this thing for me of sort of looking for belonging. I've always been a really independent person and following my own compass, partly thanks to the work and the mentorship of John. But it's also a good feeling to have connection with other humans, right? And to find belonging. And so when I sort of emerged from cancer and looking for a new way of life and a new path, and I had this sense of wanting to go live rural, people were like, oh, what you're talking about is homesteading. And I was like, oh, okay, modern homesteading, that's great. I have ancestors that homesteaded not very far from here. And then I started learning about that community, and we came to our land and I started researching. But I found there was still very much a domination control perspective in that. So people were trying to, you know, live naturally, avoid chemicals, have organic gardens, but then, you know, shooting every animal that came into their yard. And my husband and I met in a wildlife hospital when we were working with injured and orphaned animals. We fell in love releasing a once injured bald eagle back to her wild home. And that wasn't a mindset or an attitude that I wanted, that kind of dominating control. And so that's where we started calling what we did wild homesteading instead of just regular homesteading, because we couldn't find anything that was like that. Like, how do you do the sort of self-sufficiency stuff, but also thinking of it in like a wilderness mindful way? And then we sort of found permaculture, but that was sort of a little bit difficult for me to sort of wrap my mind around as well. And so a couple of things that I've found is just trying to share our journey and our perspectives online. So let's take our garden, for example, our vegetable garden. In the planning of it, we took into consideration not just the angle of the sun and where the trees are, but how could we set it up to make it unappealing for wildlife? My husband, one of the things he says is wild animals, they don't understand ownership. So if you put a bunch of beautiful salad greens in a pot in the middle of a field, or a bunch of chickens, and an animal comes to eat them, that animal isn't evil. They're not trying to ruin your life. It would be like if someone put bricks of gold in the middle of a public street and you decided to go and take one, right? But there's this mindset that's really hard for people to get around. So with our garden, I've made videos about it. I share a lot about it. We started thinking about what are the animals that live on our land and how can we be good neighbors to them? So we built it with this pea gravel across the ground that slugs don't like, because in the Pacific Northwest, we have lots and lots of slugs. We have the native slugs, the banana slugs that are sort of like the garbage men or garbage people. They eat a lot of the like rotten stuff, but we have the invasive or introduced English garden slugs that love all the things I like to grow. So first of all, we put down the gravel. Then we got these metal tanks. And that's partly because the soil here is very rocky, but then the slugs don't like to climb them. And if they do, then we put this big band of copper tape around them. And when people see them, they're like, oh, that's so pretty that you decided to make, you know, make them like flashy. It's like, no, that's there because the slugs won't go across 2 inches of copper. And then we put fencing that's up to about, you know, 5.5, almost 6 feet high, because the deer are uncomfortable with that height. We also made our garden very narrow, because even those deer who might be really jonesing for some parsley, which, fun fact, I learned that's something that deer love, they're not going to jump into a narrow area. And then the lower part of the fence, we put chicken wire, and then we put it down and then dug it out into the soil, because then the rabbits can't get through, and then coyotes and other animals aren't going to burrow into it. And these are things we made up on our own, not just sort of out of the blue, but by observing wildlife, by understanding them, how they move through an environment and their needs, so that we could then set up our own needs in a way that wasn't going to create conflict. So that's just one small example.
Now, I loved how you used your knowledge of wildlife to design and create that. The thing that I just loved that I learned from you just now, well, besides the 2 inches of copper, was that if it's a narrow between fences, the deer won't jump in. Of course they won't. That's so brilliant. Just such a really neat, a neat concept. So yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Julie, I am really curious how nature may have supported you through your journey with cancer.
Yes, in so many ways. Wow, that's a great question. And I'm trying to think of the best place to start with it. So I had, like I said, when I was diagnosed, I was already working as a park ranger. I had a very active life, but I'd become, I feel like lazy is a pretty harsh term, but I'd gotten sort of really comfortable with urban living and convenience. I'd gained a lot of weight, and I had just started to realize that that was inhibiting my ability to kind of move through the world and do the things that I wanted. And so I had started to get back into hiking and do lots of hikes. You know, out here in the Cascade Mountains, there's so much beautiful public land to explore. And so I'd started to learn how to reconnect with my body and got back in the best shape of my life since I'd been a teenager when I was diagnosed. So that time I was spending outside in nature really helped to just continue. But through many surgeries and treatments, I got so sick at times that I couldn't take those epic hikes anymore. And that really called me to slow down again, back into the sit spot. You know, sometimes I could make it out to my front porch. I could just maybe go out and do a little bit of gardening and connect in a place for a little while. And we were living in West Seattle at the time. And again, like, you know, the beautiful people that we cross paths with, that we don't understand the impact they're going to have on us. We had a landlord who had grown up in Iceland in the early part of the 1900s. And had a very different perspective on food growing than a lot of modern Americans. He let me turn the entire front yard of this urban rental house into a garden. And I started inviting the neighbor kids to come up and like run into the yard and pick peas as my full circle moment. So just having that, even that little bit of nature in my urban environment helped. At the end of treatment, at the place where everybody thought, including me, that I would feel victorious, and I was instead really broken down and experiencing PTSD, which I didn't understand at the time. I was 36 then, and turns out it's really common for young survivors, but the doctors don't talk about it. I had a big breakdown. I told my husband I thought we might need to get divorced. I wasn't sure where I was at, but that I couldn't live in the city any longer. I had had this long dream ever since I'd lived out in the country working for wilderness survival schools to go back. And I really realized I didn't know how much longer I would be alive, but I wanted to make that dream come true. So I moved out. I went and lived on a friend's property in a little cabin on the Skykomish River. And that's where I really started to feel like it was safe for me to grieve all that I had lost, childhood trauma. My best friend, who John and Aiden had met, she had died tragically at 19 in a car accident in the Colorado Mountain Pass. Like, all of that allowed this place for me to like wash that sadness out of my body, washed into the river. And I could emerge newer and stronger than ever. And I started to feel whole again. I renegotiated my marriage to make space for who I was becoming. I figured out how to talk better about my feelings as they were happening, which is still a challenge for me, but nature feels like a place where I can experience that. And then that's when we decided to find land together, and we started searching, and we came to the land where we are now. So we moved here in 2018. And in 2023, I was diagnosed with breast cancer recurrence again, every survivor's worst nightmare. And I wondered, it was a test I did not want. How am I going to handle this? How am I going to feel at the end? And I can honestly say that the ways that nature helped support me in connecting with myself and being able to connect with others, and the more than human world that I was able to sort of resurrect and re-nurture and flourish in my life has helped me, even though my treatment has been much harder and longer this time. It's helped me to really stay grounded and balanced through the journey. I realize this could be really heavy. I just shared a lot of really heavy stuff, and I know that can bring up uncomfortable feelings for others. So I just want to make space for that.
I really appreciate you sharing so transparently. I really felt your heart sharing. And I'm curious if this is part of the inspiration around wild homesteading, your vision.
Yes, it is. For me, really coming back to that place where I'm using my mind and my heart and my hands to create some of what I need for everyday survival has allowed me to put the pieces of my life back together to create something new and beautiful that is resilient and more whole than ever before. And with that sort of filling of my spirit, it has overflowed and made me want to help others realize they can have that too. You know, I thought I had to move way out to the country to make that dream come true. And in some ways that has been a beautiful gift. But not everybody can do that or wants to do that. And in doing it for myself, I realized I was already doing all these things all along in an urban environment. And so in giving back, it's helping people start where they are, use what they've got, and learn from there to grow.
Thank you for sharing this story so transparently and so deeply. And I'm really struck by the capacity of nature to receive us, to receive whatever it is that we're bringing. And it strikes me as one of the inroads for people who are, you know, interested in getting more connected with nature, that really doesn't ask anything of you other than to go to a natural place and be by yourself and sit. And there's a lot of things we can do in nature, but that's, you know, one of the paths. And it does also lead to sort of my curiosity around, you said, you know, helping people start where they are. And, you know, what have you found are the easiest ways to get started on a deeper journey?
Some of the ways I've found that are easiest to get started is with whatever people are most curious about. So I use a framework of six categories that are planning and mindset, home and construction, food and drink, grow and tend, outdoors and wildlife, and sew and craft. And I find that people come into this kind of world and have a longing, but might have more of an interest in one or another. I get a lot of people who are interested in mending. So instead of constantly consuming fast fashion, you know, buying a good quality item and repairing it, I get a lot of people who want to start growing food and don't know where, how, or wildcrafting plants. And so I like to just give people options in all of those. I think one of the simplest ones that everybody can do, no matter where you live, is to grow sprouts. So you can, you know, buy some seeds online, you get a mason jar and, you know, piece of muslin cloth, or they make these special screens, and you just like put some seeds in a jar, you rinse them every day. And in less than a week, you have fresh food, even if you don't have an outdoor balcony, as long as you have a window with some sun coming through it. So that's a place I really like to start. I also like to start with just observing the seasons. So even people who live inside, they might work inside all day. They might, you know, go from pavement to pavement. There's still a moment where you're looking out a window or you're walking outside, and you can start with, how does the breeze feel on my skin today? Or what is the moon doing in the sky? Or what is that bird that I just heard or saw? And starting from that curious place. And then letting it be like a thread that you follow, and then building from there. I also love journaling. I think journaling is a really great start. You know, for me, I talked a lot about the sit spot, but then along with the sit spot was always a companion to journaling, you know, noting my observations, follow-up questions. And I think that that can be done both, you know, for your inner experience. I've talked a lot about my own internal emotional journey. That's a great place that we think about journaling, but it can also be noting nature observations. It can be writing down recipes, or if you're going to do the seed, the sprouts thing, you know, which sprouted seeds did you use? How many days was it? Because if you're growing them in the winter versus the summer, it takes a different amount of time, but depending on how much light. So I think that the most important thing is whatever you're curious about, to start from that place and realize there's no step that's too small.
That's awesome. Yeah. And there's a theme running through everything that you're describing right now, which is, you know, again, sort of in opposition to our kind of typical modern viewpoint, right? We're such a consumption society now, right? And everything has become so convenient that there's always something to kind of get our attention and keep it, you know, right there on, you know, right there on YouTube or social media or whatever it is. And but we're very much sort of about these dopamine hits. But what you're describing in terms of, you know, this sort of, I think you said on your website, a slower, more connected life. I think the piece of that that I just really want to bring out for people, if you're connecting to this and you're going, oh man, I want to explore that more, is the expansion of time and space that occurs when you're in this slower, more connected space. You know, for me, just a quick story about tending my piece of land here. We have these two old, there's an old apple tree and an old pear tree, and they have been neglected for years. And I decided to just do some quick research on how to prune an apple and a pear this winter. And I, you know, I didn't know anything about that, but I kind of did my best. And I ended up spending a couple hours with these two trees, and it has totally transformed my relationship to my own front yard, because like they've literally become individuals, right? Like, and I don't want to be too cheesy, but it's like I consider them to be friends now, you know, and I have now been watching their day by day and week by week progression from January when we spent that time together and I pruned them. And now we're going in, you know, and we're in mid-April here, and to see them sort of the first emergence of the buds and to see those buds open up and the first flowers that were happening. And now they're all, of course, fully leafed out and they got blossoms everywhere because we're in, you know, Northern California where things just grow at an unbelievable rate of speed. But just to watch that, and I have just been so struck by the satisfaction I've experienced from that connection. And, you know, I haven't had to buy anything. I haven't had to watch anything or subscribe to anything, right? It's just this beautiful relationship right there. And it has truly been one of the highlights of my spring. And I want to reflect that because I think that's sort of the potential we have here at every little moment. And I mean, you're telling that story of the sprouts and I'm just like immediately going, yep, I'm getting sprouts, because I can imagine my 12-year-old son is just going to be so stoked to see those sprouts emerge. And then he's going to eat that salad and it's going to be the best salad he ever had. Or, you know, mom makes a really good sandwich with sprouts on it. And now it's going to be like, these are our sprouts on that sandwich, you know? And it's just, yeah, I just want to reflect and just really highlight just the incredible joy and satisfaction that comes from these sort of slow, organic and natural connections that we build through relationship with things. And yeah, I love the idea that you don't even need to have a backyard to do it with the sprouts. You just need a jar and a window.
Exactly. And I think we're living in a time where there's a lot of strong opinions about what's right and what's wrong, and that one of the things I say over and over again, and the people who see me on a regular basis start to roll their eyes, is that there really is no one right way. There's only the way that's right for you. And even that changes with different seasons of your year, of your life. And so you don't need to get caught up in what works for someone else. You can take inspiration from others. I hope people take inspiration from me. But you can find what works for you. So like for you, Aiden, that was such a beautiful story and example of like, you're living in a place that has these two trees and you just started to wonder, I wonder what it would be like if I pruned them. And then you develop this relationship with them. And I think it can also be such a radical act of resistance against that fast, fun, easy cycle that people can get caught up in and then wonder why you feel empty inside. Slowing down and having those connections, it's simple, but it's not easy. But if you just start, you never know where you could end up, right? And it does sound cheesy to say that a tree is your friend, but man, some of my best friends are trees, you know? I have started earlier in my life, and I've definitely had moments where I feel very guarded about other people and other people being unsafe and dangerous and keeping a wall around myself. And This is part of the story that goes back to renegotiating with my husband, is it wasn't that he was all wrong. He was like, Julie, you live your life like you have a moat of dragons around you. Like, we need to talk about this. I was like, gosh, it is me. I need to deal with this. So learning how to connect with nature has allowed me to develop those relationships and then learn ways to have safe and healthy relationship with other human beings. And that can come in all different kinds of ways. But connecting with people online, even if they look different than me, they have a different background, different belief system. Like, hey, you're into sourdough? Me too. What do you think? I have a cold house. What do you do to deal with the cold house? It can be this way of knitting people together that I think could be tremendously healing for our world.
I love that we started with the sit spot and that in a way we're kind of coming back to it. Do you have ideas, or do you share ideas with people about how to use these tending the land, gardening around their sit spot?
I haven't yet, because that article I told you I was researching, I only wrote it a few weeks ago. So this sort of remembering of my own origin story and this reawakening is very new. And so even though sit spot has always and continue to be a part of my life, I'm only now starting to really go back and understand that connection that I had with you and the mentoring I received. And I think that I'm still, even now, 30 years later, learning about sort of all of the things that you did to me to make me this person. right? Like, and how I can understand both now in the mentoring role of sharing those. So that is my way of saying, stay tuned. We'll see how I can figure that out. And I'm interested in any ideas that you have.
Oh, I have so many ideas, but I am waiting. So when you get that article or that YouTube video, you let us know, because I want to watch, but I'll be happy to share ideas with you offline.
Hearing this thread throughout of relationship, right? It's not just sprouts on the counter, right? It's sprouts that you made and you care that you made them, right? Like you said, it's not going to work for everyone to do sprouts, but Aiden's already excited about it. So there's something there for him, right? It's not about doing a job, right? It's about, what am I curious about and how do I want to relate with the natural world? And so that's certainly my experience in my sit spot of just noticing, listening, what's needed. And needed is one of the words. What's needed, but what's wanted by this place, by the landscape? You know, maybe it wants to have some twigs, dead twigs removed from the tree, or some old cattail pulled out to make space for the new sprouts. But it's also what's wanted for me. You know, I want the beautiful native flowers to grow, right? So I'm going to pull out some of the invasives. And I don't really want the poison oak growing right here. So I might, you know, remove some of that to make it a lovely space for myself. So in the same way that you're talking about homesteading and connecting back to, you know, the lands around our homes and our food cycles by following our curiosity, it's certainly the same thing in sit spot for me, is finding, what can I create here?
As we're wrapping up, I just want to let everybody know we're going to have lots of links in the show notes, but Julie's website is awesome, and she's got a ton of free resources on there. There's online courses, there's a lot of YouTube videos, and you can also connect with her directly and do one-on-one sessions if that's something that interests you. So there's really just a whole range of different things that you can check out there, and we'll have those links in the show notes for you all. And Julie, in my closing reflections, it's just really, really great to reconnect with you and to hear about what you're doing. And, you know, I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation today. And thank you for being here. And I'll pass it to you if you have any closing thoughts.
I just want to say it has been so wonderful to talk about these things with you and to really sort of like be able to dig in and reflect on my own origin story with people who were there and played a crucial role in that. And it's just an honor to be able to talk with you about these things and to connect with you now as people who are out there doing that work in the world for others. So thank you so much for having me.
It really feels like Wild Homestead Living is a sister to Living Connection First. And it might be the 30 years, I don't know, but whatever it is, keep doing what you're doing, Julie. Good luck to you and Kevin.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. You're bringing that calm feeling into this conversation, that slowing down feeling. You really embody it. And that's something that we really believe and practice, right? It's about embodiment and what you're actually living and experiencing. So yeah, it's such a pleasure to connect with you as well.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. If you enjoy this podcast, it would mean a lot to us if you would take a minute to follow or subscribe. Following the podcast helps us, and it helps you, because you'll never miss an episode. We'd also love for you to give us a 5-star rating and review and share an episode with a friend. To learn more about our current offerings, visit livingconnectionfirst.net. We'll see you next time.